All right, high school hockey fans, it's the week we've been waiting for all season long. We are talking state tournament action, baby. On this weekend, Wisconsin Prep Hockey, the whole cast of crazies is all here. Bill Berg Jr., Del Scanlon, myself, Mike Hammett is here. And guys, we had some pretty exciting sectional action, and it's going to make for a pretty good state tournament. First, let's welcome everybody. Junior, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I just got home from hockey practice.
Okay. Bill?
I'm just happy to be here.
Just happy to be here.
Yep.
Okay. Del, I know you're more than happy to be here.
Yeah.
I'm
still awake.
I know us guys, we have to get up early. But hey, we're going to talk about our recaps first year of our sectional finals and stuff that we did get the chance to watch. I was at the sectional final for the Oregon Panthers and Fond du Lac Springs. And that was such a phenomenal game, guys. 1-0 game. It was a final. Andrew Jakey, I finally learned how to pronounce his last name. J-I-C-H-A. It's pronounced Jakey. Okay? Scores the only goal of the game with about 1:04 left in the second period and kind of a little turnover. His teammate Mason Anderson got him the puck, and he was right there in the mid-slot and whistled a quick shot over the glove side of the Fond du Lac Springs goaltender. 1-0 after two. And it's a game where it was really dominated a lot in shots by Springs, but the goalie for, and we'll talk more about him later, the goalie for Oregon was just phenomenal. Made 38 saves, made some big ones at key times, and the Oregon Panthers punched their ticket to state with a 1-0 win over Fond du Lac Springs. And then they got to come back.
Was it a physical game? And did Oregon come out pounding on them? Because we've heard before that that's the way to approach Springs is to pound them.
Yeah, I think Talon Blank, I think they went after him pretty good. They were, you know, letting them know that we're right here and we're going to be here the whole game. And his chances, he had a couple chances, but, you know, for the most part, they really kept him in check. But their goaltender for Oregon was just phenomenal in that game. I mean, there were so many times that Springs would hold the zone forever and get shot after shot off, and it just nothing would get by him. And the more and more the game went, it just looked like the more he's just settled in and, you know, relaxed and played. And next thing you know, with 11 seconds left and both teams have used their timeouts, they get an offensive zone faceoff for Springs. And, you know, I thought, well, here it comes. This is going to be, you know, make or break here. And, you know, they were able to hold Springs off the board and Oregon bench went nuts and it was a 1-0 win for them.
So, MJ, I know you said, you know, McAlpine had a heck of a game in net, 38 saves. What were the shots like? Were they good shots? Were they being forced outside or?
No, they had a number of very good shots. They had a lot of screens and stuff, but the kid was just locked in. I mean, you know, there was no other way to put it. He was locked in. He was ready to go, and he was just phenomenal. I mean, I thought that there was a power play late. There was a power play in the third period for Springs, and they got some pretty good shots off on him, but he, you know, stopped every one of them. It just the puck just wasn't going to go in on that night for Springs, and it didn't. And Oregon gets the 1-0 win and moves on to state. Girls game on Saturday, the Metro Lynx taking on Viroqua, two Badger Conference teams. And this was one where it was pretty much over with early in this game. It was 3-0 after one period, as a couple of girls on the Lynx team had 2 power play goals each. And Grace Bunnell had a goal in the game as well. And Viroqua got a couple of offensive chances, but really not a whole lot. In this game, you could see that Metro Lynx was the better team, and they were had the deeper bench. And they come out with a 5-1 win in this game. And, you know, in 3 games, Viroqua against the Metro Lynx had scored 1 goal total through these 3 games. So the Metro Lynx have been a tough matchup for Viroqua. The Blackhawks played hard, but, you know, it was just the Metro Lynx's day, as they played very well. And they're going back to state with a 5-1 win over Viroqua. Dell, you want to chime in about what you've seen?
Friday night, I made the trip down to Sun Prairie, where we had Verona being the host team, home team, against Edgewood. And this was a game where Verona dominated the first period. They scored 3 goals. It's the first time I got to see Marski and Moline and Cordray play this year. And those 3 guys pretty much owned that first period. The third goal of the period, was a goal that just kind of showed you exactly what to expect out of it. Marski had made a patch over pass to Cordray, who threw it back in front of the net, and it got redirected by Moline past the goalie and to the net. And you guys, we've talked about the goalie from Edgewood before. He's no slouch in the net, Rowan White. You know, he's been up for awards before, but that first period just wasn't his period. And that's what Verona used to go on to a 4-1 win on Friday night to advance to the state tournament. But otherwise, good game, nice speed by both teams. But I think that one of the biggest differences in it was Verona was a little bit bigger and a little more physical in it than what Edgewood was.
And you know, Edgewood wasn't throwing Menzel and Weebush out there this year as well. I mean, those two guys accounted for a lot of points for them last year when they made a trip to state. They knocked off Verona in the sectional. But, you know, those two guys, they're hard to replace. And in a game like that, I think maybe that's a difference maker right there.
And Blake Craven, you know, he had a good game in that. You know, they put 25 shots on him, and he stopped 24 of them. So.
Yeah, you talk about Menzel and Weebush, MJ. One of the nice things about high school sports is that you don't have to watch Tom Brady play for 40 years or Derek Jeter play for 40 years. You watch 4 years, that's it. Then you're gone. Then your team's got to replace you. And they don't get to go, you know, to the free agent market to do so.
Unless you're the goalie for Fond du Lac, you can play for 7 years.
If you're from Fond du Lac and your last name is Schober, you're just allowed to be goalie for as long as you want. Even if Schober is spelled differently between multiple Schober goalies.
Hey, Bill, you know, he mentions Tom Brady and how long Tom Brady played, but you know George Blanda played longer than him.
Yeah, he was, well, I guess he was a backup quarterback, but he was just primarily a kicker.
Yeah.
They're not real football players.
Right.
So,
okay. Go ahead, Dell.
And on Saturday, I had the 1 o'clock game in Fond du Lac, where USM came up from Milwaukee and Bay Area came down from Ashwaubenon area to play the girls. Sectional 3 final, 4 final, whatever it was there was one of them, but it was between Bay Area and USM. two teams out of the Eastern Shores Conference. And this was a game that, once again, it was won in the first period where Bay Area scores three goals and Emily Bill picked up two goals, and one of them being a shorthanded with 10 seconds remaining in the period. And, you know, they end up going on to a 3-1 victory over USM. This was one where the depth for Bay Area and the speed was just something that USM couldn't keep up with. You had Bay Area putting out three solid lines, you know, the entire game.
I don't know that anybody on the girls' sites can keep pace with Bay Area. I mean, when I saw them, effortlessly fast. I mean, some girls, when you watch them skate, you can just see their arms and legs pop, and you can tell they're giving it everything they got. Those girls from Bay Area, they just glide up and down the ice faster than anybody else. They're effortlessly fast.
Well, and I was talking to one of the parents from Bay Area, and he said one player to actually keep your eye on coming up in the next couple of years, but she's only a freshman this year, is their number 28. I think it's pronounced Faye Brunke. And, you know, you watched her on the ice and you could see her speed. And Emily Bill, you know, and Bill, you took pictures of Bay Area. So, you know, number 8 is one that you saw practically every place you were taking a picture. And then after I finished up in Fond du Lac, I made a drive on up to Ashwaubenon to see Bayport against Notre Dame. The third meeting between the two teams this season, and actually the second time this season that they had to go to overtime for a victory. And this was one that both teams scored in the first period, both teams scored in the third period, and then 29 seconds into overtime, Notre Dame ends up picking up the win, Hunter Bill being credited with the goal in overtime. Early in that first period, I expected Bayport to end up getting a goal when the goaltender for Notre Dame made a mistake behind the net, ends up turning the puck over, somehow manages to get two saves out of it and kept Bayport out of the net there. But yeah, you know, it was a good game. It's the first time I've gotten to see Notre Dame play this season.
Well, and, it's
– go ahead.
When I watched them this year, it's kind of reminds me of Herb Brooks. You're talking about the Russians, you know. Nobody's been able to skate with them for 60 minutes. I mean, if you can keep the game close against Notre Dame, but they're so much faster and the other team has to work so hard that eventually they just grind you down.
I mean, I was watching the stream of that game, and the last 12 minutes of the third period, they just dominated that game. Bayport took the lead 44 seconds into the third period. And then, you know, around about 2-3 minutes later, Notre Dame just kicked it into a gear that they hadn't looked at before. And they just dominated the remainder of that game. They only got one goal and then sent it to overtime, but that's what they needed. But it was like a whole different team out there. They have a gear for playing from behind that Coach McCracken's teams haven't always shown when he brings some of those dominant teams down. In the past, they haven't been able to play from behind, and this one can.
Well, that's what I always liked it back in the day when still in Antigo and playing Stevens Point, and when Antigo would get ahead, because Stevens Point didn't have that gear. What happened when you were ahead of them back in those days? It was like everybody was trying to do it themselves and beat you, you know, by themselves, and their team just kind of fell apart if you got ahead of them. But apparently, it's not the same in Notre Dame.
You know, that second goal that they scored and Notre Dame scored was just one of those ones where you had the two guys bringing it down, and it was kind of almost like a drop pass back to the goal scorer, except it was a little off to the left, and it was just such a quick wrist shot that Rusley just did not have a chance to react to it, and it beat him off to his left. But, you know, very good game. And of course, it's two teams that know each other. They early in the game, it seemed like both teams are having a problem catching the passes, but it was due to the pressure from the other team and knowing exactly what they were planning on doing with the puck. With that, I'll pass it on over to
Junior.
Yeah, I was supposed to have two games, but then they moved one because it didn't make sense to come down to Mosinee for Superior and Hayward. That would be a weird trip. So they moved their game. I didn't get to go to that one. So I only caught Lakeland and Mosinee in Mosinee. Lakeland being the home team in that contest, which is always fun when you're the home team in the other team's building. Burglar and I saw Lakeland and Mosinee play in the Great Northern Conference tournament just a couple weeks ago. And watching that game, I couldn't understand how Lakeland had beaten Mosinee earlier in the season because they just looked lost and confused on offense. And Mosinee had a lot of really good chances and ended up winning that game 6-3. Now, this time down in Mosinee for the sectional final game, I thought Lakeland outplayed them for a good chunk of the game, and a couple timely goals from Mosinee and some excellent goaltending from Aiden Karst, who I believe is just a sophomore, got them the 2-1 win. The kind of goals that you can't always count on, but you'd like to have. They had a 5-minute power play thanks to a major for, I believe it was head contact. Defenseman fires the puck right into the shin guards of a Lakeland player, and it bounces over to Caden Schmerler. And before anybody can react, he puts it in the back of the net to give them their one goal. And then the second one was not that long after. It was a shot from the point through traffic. It hit Max Mesaiva in his blocker, but it had enough on it to just bounce up and over and trickle in. Not the pretty nice play goals that Mosinee scored in the Great Northern Conference game, but just kind of opportune goals. And then they rode their goalie for the rest of it. It was a really nice game. It was a much better game than the two teams played last time. And this time Mosinee came out on top.
Burglar.
Okay, since we last met, I saw four games. I'm going to throw in the Superior game at Spash that I saw, the semifinal game on Tuesday. Just because, well, it's Superior and they beat Spash. That's two good things right there. But yeah, the young Spartans have arrived early. Well, I think I was standing next to a gentleman who was videotaping, but nobody uses video, who was recording the game for Superior, and it turns out he was the father of defenseman Jackson Martholler. I'm sure I'm butchering that name. But yeah, he was telling me that, I saw that Superior had 10 freshmen on their team. That's something that never happened back when I was in high school, because we didn't even have freshmen at the high school. There was rare even for a sophomore to make the varsity team, but they had 10 freshmen on the team. And he said those 10, the freshmen, well, they're, yeah, ninth fresh. So last year they were eighth graders. They were first year Bantams. They met Stevens Point in the Class 1A championship game. The year before that, as Peewees, they met Stevens Point in the Class 1A championship game. So, you know, we had talked before about how Hudson had dominated the youth levels, and their team was just kind of finishing up now. You know, Superior's coming up at that point, and, you know, 10 freshmen and 6 sophomores, and it's just like they kind of arrived as a team earlier than expected. But yeah, two of the freshmen, Braden Severin and Jackson Mathaler, They combined to score the first goal against Bash, and then in the sectional final against Hudson, they got the switched roles, goal and assist, but they got the only goal for Superior in that game. But the other guys from Superior, Carson Guttler is a senior. He was the best player on that team that I saw. But the other two guys on his line, that the line that really dominated the second and third period, were Lucas Williams, who's a sophomore, and Caden Leah, who's a junior, and their goalie's a sophomore. So they lose Guttler, arguably their best player, but the bulk of the team comes back, and they're all a year bigger, a year older next year. Superior's in my preseason top six for next year. They're a young team, and they're only going to get better. Then we're going to move on to the finals. On Friday, Brett and I went to Amory, where New Richmond was the home team against the visiting Amory Warriors. Both teams were big, fast, and physical. For New Richmond, we knew about catcher Langness. He was our player of the week not that long ago. I don't think we'd heard much about Bjorn Bonneman, who's a sophomore. He had two of New Richmond's goals and assisted on the game winner. But the guy that really made it happen for New Richmond, I think, was Easton Schmidt. He's a senior defenseman. And it's like Dell just mentioned, you process the pictures after the game, and number two is in like all the pictures. Easton Schmidt, I think Bill said he finished just outside of our top five for the defenseman voting this year. It was surprising. Two of the best goalies in the state, Blake Milton for New Richmond and Avery Starzecki for Amory. They each gave up two goals in the first period. And I'm thinking, are we looking at a 6-5 or 7-6 game here? But no, there was only one more goal scored after that. They both settled in and you know, kept the puck out of the net. But yeah, New Richmond, just a little bit too fast. They're fast, big, physical. The next day we went on to Somerset. We saw Menominee and Regis Altoona McDonald play. And there for 29 minutes, it was a goalie show. The whole first period and 12 minutes of the second period belonged to Ram goalie Alex Erickson and Menominee goalie Jack Drought. Eventually the goals were scored. It was 2-2 getting late in the third period. At 2:53, New Richmond took a penalty. Menominee took a penalty. So Ram called a timeout to set up their power play. You know, might as well. You got less than 3 minutes to go. Use it now. They did not score on that power play. And with about a half minute left, puck down in their end. Ram goalie Harrison, froze the puck. Less than a half minute to go. So, Menominee took their timeout and set something up. And whatever they set up worked because they won the draw. Back to David Fern on defense, who fired a shot towards the slot. Not towards the net. He fired a shot towards the slot where let me put his last name on here. But he deflected it up over the goaltender. The final goal scores at like 20 seconds left. Menominee comes out with the win there. Couple of things funny. One is that, I'll do this part. On our way out of the rink, one of the Menominee hockey moms comes up. Hey, you're that guy from the podcast, aren't you? Oh, Christ. Bill's been, you know, he's been having trouble loading up just the audio. He's been putting the video up there with it. So apparently now we're celebrities. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a celebrity anyway. So he's like, yes, yes, I am.
Oh, this one's all you, buddy.
Oh, and then to get this. Can I get a selfie with you? She actually took a pic. And I said, thank you, man. This is a first. Nobody's ever, my wife doesn't even want pictures taken with me. Nobody's wanted it. So yeah, anyway.
Did you sign the autograph too?
Huh?
Did you sign the autograph too?
I couldn't sign her camera.
Why not?
But anyway, she said, well, you should know that about Menominee fans. We're very friendly here. In fact, you should know more about, you know, Division II, Section 3 in general, because as you recall last week, we admitted we didn't know anything about that section. So apparently she does listen to and watch our podcast. How you doing? Thank you. It was fun. Glad to meet you. And you know, Menominee is my new favorite fan base. Go Mustangs. The other thing that happened is when I was there and, you know, apparently, I don't know whether Bill's picture on the things or not, but I was there with Brett, my grandson, and a couple times he was mistaken. He was called Bill Jr.
Now I feel insulted.
I'm much better looking. I'm just saying. So, yeah, so, you know, because I guess on the podcast, we do talk often about how we go to games together. But so, yep. But then, you know, we had a break. That game ended at 2. The next game wasn't until 4. So we went to the Sportsman's, which was recommended by Coach Dan Gilkerson. We went there. I think it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, should be easy to, you know, get lunch or whatever. And there we got, and the place was packed. All the tables in the middle had been pushed together to form one long row. And we looked, and they're all wearing Hudson jerseys. So, like, Hudson fans were packing into place. And, well, Brett was wearing the Wisconsin Prep Hockey jacket, and I had my Wisconsin Prep Hockey hoodie on. So they picked us out right away. And we were thinking that, you know, if Trasher was here, you know, he'd have them all buying him drinks. And like Bill said, he, you know, probably hitting on the women. But we didn't do that. We had our lunch. We went back to the game, watched Hudson and the Cooley Region Cyclones play. Diana Hansen with an O, not Hansen with an E, Hansen with an O for Cooley and Katarina Donna for Hudson. Their shot totals were only in the 20s, but a large chunk of those were breakaway goals. I mean, somehow each team was able to slip a forward behind the defenders and get a pass, and there had to be a half a dozen breakaways by each team, and none of them scored. Both goalies were really outstanding in that game. For Hudson, the player that really, what did Glenn Bethel say? The straw that stirs the drink. The player that makes things go for Hudson is Avery Martin, defender, tall. I think she's 5'9". They had her listed at. She when the puck's on their own, she takes care of it. She gets it out. She gets it down the other way. And when it's time to score, she hands it off to Kaylee Prater, slick puck handling forward, who skates around a few people and looks for an opening and then snipes the corner. So yeah, 14 and 24, we're just getting the job done for Hudson. For the Cyclones, it was number 22, Jaden Hams, Hamms. I'm going to say it's pronounced like the beer, Hams. She's a senior.
The land of sky blue waters.
Yeah, they have her listed as a forward, both in the program and on our website. They have her listed as a forward, but she played defense. in this game, or at least she lined up for faceoffs, you know, as a defender. But she'd take the carry, she'd carry the puck up through, and has a heck of, had really good shot, hard shot from the point. Whenever they're a power play or something, or she'd go to an open area and, you know, put her stick up in the air and it's like, feed me, you know, and she'd just hammer one. But as I was looking after the game, looking at the score, you know, because Hudson, you know, they're a four seed. How did they get to be a four seed in this thing, you know? And they had a 7-game losing streak that went from January 14th to January 30th, lost 7 games in a row. And 3 of those games were against teams they faced in the playoffs: Eau Claire area, St. Croix Valley, and the Cooley Region Cyclones. So they avenged 3 of those losses from that 7-game losing streak. And the team that started the 7-game losing streak for them was the Spartans of Superior. And that's who they face on Thursday. So they'll get a chance to go 4-for-4 against the teams that handed them that losing streak. And that was my weekend.
I do want to add, I do know 2 things about Menominee hockey. Just to get it out there. I know Rob Smith, who's no longer with us, died of leukemia in 2012. Rob was their leading forward when they went to state in 1990 and when they won it in 1991, beating Superior 3-2. He ended up playing baseball and football at the University of Minnesota. And in 2004, some of you may remember, the player of the year was Dan Swanson from Menominee in Wisconsin. He was the player of the year. Then he played 2 years of juniors and he played 4 years of D1 hockey with University of Nebraska. So I do know 2 things about Menominee hockey.
Well, the one good thing is since 1991, they haven't been to the state tournament. And I know that's gotta be a pretty exciting time in Menominee right now, knowing your team's going to the state tournament and, you know, and feeling like you got a pretty good chance there. I mean, look at guys, it's like we talked about, that playing in that Big Rivers Conference may have set them up for success in the playoffs.
Yeah, and we'll get into it when we, you know, we get into the state tournament talk, but unfortunately their first round opponent happens to be the champion of that same Big Rivers Conference.
Hmm. Well, that's why they play the games. Let's move on. Best Western Premier Park Hotel Players of the Week, the playoff edition. On the boys' side, this young man, we talked about him earlier. It was just phenomenal on Friday night. In fact, he was phenomenal all through the playoffs. 24 saves, no goals allowed in a 2-0 win over McFarland, sectional semifinal, 24 saves, 2 goals allowed, 7-2 win over Beaver Dam, sectional final, 38 saves, no goals, and a 1-0 win over St. Mary's Springs. Of course, I'm talking about Nate McAlpine, the goalie for the Oregon Panthers. He is our boys' Best Western Premier Park Hotel Player of the Week. And guys, he's you look at those numbers, he's pretty well deserving of that.
Well, you know, the thing is that second, You look at those, the second and that third win that, you know, he posted those saves in, Beaver Dam, St. Mary Springs, 2 teams that were definitely deserving of their rankings and their seeding spots in that sectional. And I mean, to hold Springs scoreless for one is, you know, we know how good that is, you know, for the team to be able to do that against them. But then to beat Beaver Dam 7-2, that was impressive.
You know, and Oregon hasn't been to the state tournament since 2000. In fact, they weren't even a standalone team then. They went with McFarland. They had the McFarland-Oregon co-op, I guess you could say. And, you know, 23 years later, here they are. They're back at state. So congratulations to them. Nate McAlpine, the goalie for the Oregon Panthers, a huge part of it. our Best Western Premier Park Hotel Player of the Week on the boys' side. On the girls' side, how about another goalie? Kat Donna, the goalie from Hudson for the Raiders. Regional final, 13 saves, no goals in a 3-0 win over ECA. Sectional semifinals, 37 saves, one goal against in a 2-1 win over St. Croix Valley. Sectional final, 23 saves, one goal in a 2-1 win over Cooley Region. So Kat Donna, another one of those huge reasons why her team is going to state. She's our girls' Wisconsin prep hockey Best Western Premier Park Hotel Player of the Week playoff edition on the girls' side. Kat Donna, the goalie for Hudson.
Yeah, Matt Cranston, the coach of the Fusion, told us earlier in the season that she was going to cause problems for teams in the playoffs. And there she is, bouncing the Fusion out in the sectional semifinal with a 37-save effort.
Well, time to start talking about what we got going on at state, guys.
Well, MJ, talking about what we're going into state was the first one that you're talking about, and that's that Big Rivers Conference matchup, the number one seed New Richmond against the number four seed Menominee. Of course, they both played twice during Big Rivers Conference play. First meeting was at Menominee. New Richmond won that one 6-0 and outshot Menominee 44-15. Second meeting in New Richmond, New Richmond won 5-2, outshot Menominee 42-18. So in those two games, they held Menominee to 33 shots and everything. So I haven't seen either one of these teams play except on Live Barn, and that doesn't give you a good view of it. But I do know that Brugler's seen them.
I did. I saw them both this weekend. And I got two words for Menominee Mustangs. Well, two words besides, go Mustangs, my favorite fan base. The other thing I have for Menominee, two words are Marshfield Tigers. The Marshfield Tigers lost to Wausau West in the Wisconsin Valley Conference, I think 7-0 and 7-2, and then beat them in the playoffs. So it can be done. It's been done this year, this month.
So you're saying the Mustangs got the Tigers right where they want them?
Yes. Overconfident.
Pony power.
So, yeah, I mean, it can happen. That's Menominee's got a good team. New Richmond's got a good team. That's why they play the game.
Well, it's another one of those things, like I said, high school sports, you don't get to keep a player more than 4 years. These also aren't professionals. A high school athlete is much more likely to look past an opponent than a pro is. Even you see pros do it from time to time where you can tell they just were not prepared for that game because they were looking for the big one next week. But it's a thing. And if it doesn't, you don't even have to be flat long. We've seen teams over the years, you just come out flat for like the first 5 minutes and you bury yourself in a hole. Even if they don't come out flat, if Menominee comes out with fire and says, you know what, we're not going to let you push us around, they can do it. As Brugler said, we saw it with Marshfield and Wausau West. Heck, we saw Wisconsin Rapids beat Eau Claire Memorial. You still have to go out there and win, and hockey's hard.
The other thing is, as you said, Junior, these are high school kids yet, and getting into a game like this, there's a lot of times that the nerves are there, and for very good reason. I mean, this is some of the biggest games that they've played in, and so that first 5 minutes can mean a lot.
Other half of the bracket has the Mosinee Indians taking on the Oregon Panthers. Guys, I've seen Oregon play, and, you know, they had a tough time against Springs, and Springs is a very good team, but they were able to pull out the win. Andrew Jakey is maybe one of the most underrated forwards in the state. And their goaltender, McAlpine, played extremely well. I mean, they were smart. They did a pretty good job of staying out of the box. So Oregon, I think, will be prepared for this one to play Mosinee.
Well, and I think Mosinee is more physical than Springs are, but otherwise Mosinee and Springs are very similar teams from a matchup perspective. They're both largely fast, kind of finesse teams. Mosinee's a little more physical than Springs, but fast finesse teams who have one hyper-talented scorer at the top and a couple other good ones that are quite a ways back. You know, Caden Schmerler had 45 goals for Mosinee in the regular season. Their next closest was 18. That's a lot like Talon Blank and Springs. You know, you can count on him to light it up, but their next, you know, Austin Westergaard had quite a few fewer goals than him off the top of my head. I'm not going to go look it up right now. So like matchup wise, it's a very similar game for Oregon. And, you know, a lot of people on social media were surprised at Oregon's win, but they were a top six team in D2 most of the year. They slipped out right at the end of the year, but they were top six pretty much all year. And even when they fell out, you know, seventh, I mean, if we were still doing top tens, they'd have still been on the list. So it's like, it's not like they're a huge surprise.
One of the things that was holding Oregon back for a couple seasons there was the play in net. And this year, it looks like with McAlpine kind of solidifying that back there, it's given them a chance to win some games, and it's also getting them a chance to go to state and win some games there.
These teams, they didn't play each other. They didn't have a lot of common opponents. I was looking at how they did against, you know, some of the Division I teams. And, you know, Mosinee played quite a few Division I teams. I mean, they beat DC Everest. I mean, they lost, you know, to Wausau West. They beat Marshfield Division I. They lost to University School. So they played Division I, didn't have a whole lot of success against the Division I teams. They lost to Stevens Point. They lost to Appleton. You know, beat DC Everest, but that's not really a stronger team. Oregon had several games against Division I teams, and they beat some of them. Like they beat Arrowhead. They beat Janesville. And, you know, Janesville was a quality team this year. You know, Oregon beat them 3-2. So they did, you know, they had a couple of wins. So I think both teams are tested, but it'll be fun.
And Mosinee's only got one Division II loss this year. The losses were all Division I, except for their early season loss to Lakeland. And they've since beaten Lakeland twice.
Move on to the girls' brackets. Looking at Bay Area taking on the Madison Metrolinx and Superior and Hudson. Matching up in the other game.
The Bay Area Metrolinx, this will be their second meeting this season. They met January 21st at the Madison Ice Arena, where the Lynx fell 7-1. But I think the more shocking thing to me, because knowing the speed that both teams have, was that Bay Area outshot the Lynx 58-20 in that game.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, without seeing the game, you don't know how many of those were rebounds that were given up or what. But still, 58-20 is, you know, in one game is quite a bit. And now the last part of that game, I think they brought in the backup goalie, but she made all 15 saves that she ended up facing in that game for the Lynx. But yeah, as we said earlier, from the teams I've seen, the Lynx is probably the closest one I can see to try to keep up with the speed of Bay Area. But I'm not sure that the Lynx are as physical as Bay Area.
Watching the Metro Lynx on Saturday, I thought as I watched them, they have some skill. They seem to play pretty good position hockey. They seem to anticipate well. And these are all things they're going to need to do probably even more this time if they want to beat Bay Area, move on to the championship game. I haven't seen Bay Area, but just what I hear from you guys, I hear that this is, sounds like this is a team to beat. And, the Metro Lynx are going to get a shot at them. And, they're playing good hockey, so anything can happen.
Well, I saw them. Superior is the team to beat, but that's my opinion.
I saw them midway through the season, and one of the parents I was talking with, I commented about just how fast they were. He said, yeah, but we just have a hard time putting the puck in the net. I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but since then, apparently they found a couple girls that can put the puck in the net, and they started doing that. So yeah, they are a scary team.
Superior and Hudson, two teams that I haven't had a chance to see. Obviously, you guys up there have seen them more than I have. How are you looking at this one?
As Bergler said earlier, losing streak that Hudson was in was started by the Spartans, and that was actually a 4-3 overtime game. The game took 61 minutes, 57 seconds. So, I'm not sure. They must have played two overtimes at that point to get to that, because to get to 61 minutes, that's 10 minutes past your
bedtime
regulation.
Yeah, that have gone into the 3-on-3 second overtime for regular season.
So, a good game. I've seen him play. Cooper's, reminds me a lot of Kendall Sundby and everything, the way she skates and stuff. Bergler, you saw him this weekend.
No, we didn't see the Superior.
I didn't see the Superior game. Okay.
Superior is, they've got two 30-goal scorers on the roster, Autumn Cooper and Michaela Renke. Of the surviving teams, the Lynx have Emma Stebbins, who's a 30-goal scorer. None of the remaining teams have a 30-goal scorer. Riley Springer led the state with 48. Kendall Sundby had 37. Zoe Hunter had 37 for Black River Falls. Taylor Heleniak had 32 for the Edge. So those three players, Autumn Cooper, Emma Stebbins, and Michaela Renke, the only 30-goal scorers who made it to the state tournament, and Superior's got two of them. That's probably the best 1-2 punch we've seen in a long time. And I watched some of their game against Hayward on IFAN. Nice broadcast IFAN does pretty much all season long. And, they pointed out something that, Spear has had some really good hockey players on the girls' side over the years. That UW-Eau Claire team that was, runner-up and then national champion at D3, they had a few Superior girls on that team. Superior has to consistently put girls into college hockey at the D3 level. But what they've not had in recent years is depth, and this year they have it, and I think you can see it in their record. They've got two big time scorers in the top, and then they're just good. They're just a good solid team the rest of the way through.
One of the things that did come up, at the bar with the Hudson people, I said, we're looking forward to, you know, if it's Superior and Hudson in the state tournament, that then, you know, half of the state tournament is, you know, non-co-op teams. It's like, you know, and, you know, right away, oh, no, Superior's co-op. They're with Northwestern. All right. For the purposes of the WIAA, it's a co-op. It's like when we were in Antigo, there's a little dinky town north of Antigo called Elko, little dinky town to the east of Antigo called White Lake. I mean, there was a kid from Elko that played youth hockey in Antigo. When he got to high school level, he couldn't play because he didn't go to the end of school. And Wisconsin Valley Conference, which Antigo was in at the time, did not allow co-ops. So they had to pretend that he moved to Antigo. His dad rented an apartment or something. They pretended he moved to Antigo so he could go to Antigo school and be in there. And then later on, different situation. Now they're in the Great Northern, doesn't have that rule about co-ops. There's a kid from White Lake. White Lake, I mean, little dinky. Their graduating class is 22 kids. I mean, little dinky town. They don't have a hockey program. The kids of White Lake, they play hockey in Antigo. So Wickersheim was Brett's age. You know, he school choice goes to Antigo, fine. Kabaki kid a couple years later didn't want a school choice, so they got some money from White Lake to make it a co-op. That's not a co-op like, well, Dan Bauer's favorite Central Wisconsin Storm. That's not like a co-op of four, you know, four schools and, you know, three separate hockey programs merging into one girls team. It's a small school with a kid from the suburbs who plays there. And that, so I explained, that's what Superior, I mean, yeah, it's not a co-op. There's one girl from Northwestern, you know, skates there. Well, then right away, you know, they point out, well, they had a girl from Hayward that moved there to go to school there. That's not a co-op. It doesn't make it a co-op either. I don't know. I think the Hudson fans do not like Superior. I mean, they just kept throwing reasons why.
I'm sure that no girl has ever moved to Hudson to play hockey.
Right. I mean, they just kept throwing reasons at me why, you know, Hudson is more of a pure team than those bastards up in Superior. But I wasn't buying it. So we have two big co-ops on one side and two non-co-ops on the other side.
Okay.
We'll see what Dan Bauer says about that evil empire.
Let's move on to the boys' Division One. Notre Dame Academy taking on USM. And the Verona Wildcats taking on the Hudson Raiders. Looking at this one, obviously everybody says Notre Dame's going to be the favorite because Notre Dame's been number one all year long.
Right, and until they lose a game, you have to pick them. I mean, they're undefeated.
Well, looking here, I just pulled up Verona here. Verona lost to Hudson second game of the season, 2-1.
They outshot him quite a bit, but Aiden Teppering is a very good goalie.
Yeah. They also lost to Notre Dame 4-3. So, let's see. Did they play USM this year? Yes, they played U School. They beat them 6-2. So, they've had some success. Well, they beat U School, and they were right there in the two other games with Hudson and Notre Dame. Verona could pull this off. I mean, I told you guys early in the year that they're flying under the radar a little bit, got a little bit of a slow start, and all of a sudden then, 0-2, and then they roll off seven straight until they ran into Notre Dame. And then they rolled off a couple more wins, lost to Janesville, and then they just kept rolling after that. Verona's going to be a tough out.
Notre Dame's not invincible, but I mean, it's a tall order.
I think they just played university school. Like in the last couple weeks.
They beat university school 6-1 and outshot them 48-15.
Okay.
Means they may look past them.
And, but yeah, I think both semifinals should be good games. And I think that the Verona Hudson game, you know, that's a coin toss. It, you know, it could go either way.
You know, Hudson's got that three-peat thing they're thinking about.
And Verona has knocked Notre Dame out of the playoffs many times.
Notre Dame and Verona's always been a tough matchup for Notre Dame.
We were talking about that earlier in the year. You asked about Notre Dame going to the state tournament undefeated. They haven't gone to the state tournament undefeated, but they've gone to the state tournament several times in the last few years with one or two losses on their schedule. And it's shocking how many of those state tournaments ended with them losing to Verona.
Well, you look at the one back in 2020. I mean, that one that went to, I believe it was double overtime, but, you know, Verona had a number of goals waved off in that game. And Notre Dame, I remember they had quite a few power plays. They just couldn't score on the power play.
Now, none of this is going to make me pick somebody other than Notre Dame. They're undefeated. But, I mean, and they're, like, scary good.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen them play, but I go off what you guys are, you know, telling me. So you're right. They're scary good. Well, their record speaks for itself. They've
Beat everybody. Bayport and Verona gave them their best games of the season.
I think, you know, the one thing to keep in mind is you look at the two games against Bayport that went into overtime. They fell behind, but they didn't panic. The first game, they scored late in the third period to tie it up at 1, if I'm correct, Junior. I think you were at that game.
Would you call that late in the third period? Burglar was at 8.3 seconds left.
And then they went in overtime. So.
Well, yeah, they mean. Bayport, I mean, yeah, 8.3 seconds. Bayport came out of that, came in. They were deflated, dejected, if you will. They were down coming in overhead. It didn't take Notre Dame long to capitalize and score. I don't want to downplay university school, but just the fact that they just recently lost. But I think between Verona and Hudson, I think whoever does win that game, yes, Notre Dame is going to be the favorite, but I can see a way for either of those teams to beat them. You know, unlike, you know, some teams like, you know, we saw, you know, like to beat St. Mary's Springs, you got to be physical with it. You got to pound them. You can, you know, or key on, you know, Talon Blank, or just be physical with them. Or, you know, some other teams, you know, maybe they're goaltenders. You just put a lot of shots on net, or, you know, but I don't see any weakness on Notre Dame. Their top four defensemen are as good as any in the state. Collectively, they're better than any top four defensemen in the state. You know, and their forwards are fast and dynamic, and they spread the puck around. They don't have an obvious weakness, but, you know, I still see whoever wins that Verona Hudson game, you know, being able to give them a good shot. Whether they can do it for 51 minutes is going to be the key. Because you got to work your ass off.
Because that's what nobody's been able to do. I mean, Bayport has played with them twice, three times. Verona played with them, but doing it for the whole game is tough because, I mean, a lot of teams will tell you that they're putting three lines out on the ice, but like that third one, you're just hoping nothing bad happens. I mean, with Notre Dame, they're putting three lines on the ice and they're all good.
Quick question, and I don't know if any, the three is Capital Ice Olympic size sheet, or is it smaller, MJ?
I think it's smaller.
It's the regulation NHL size standard.
Okay.
Rate. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. As it should be. Getting back to Burglar's earlier comment on the girls bracket, I just wanted to, of the 28 girls teams, Hudson is 24th in enrollment. Superior is 25th. Only Northland Pines, Viroqua, and Medford are smaller than those two schools, those two teams.
And looking here, looking at Hudson here, they didn't play Notre Dame this year. Like I said, they did play Verona.
They played them earlier in the season.
Oh, there it is.
4-1 Notre Dame, and the shots were pretty lopsided.
And
what was the other 12? I mean, Hudson didn't get a lot of shots, but 33 is not a huge total from Notre Dame. I mean, that's overcomable.
Okay. I see that just in case that university school does get by Notre Dame, they're an underdog. They did play Hudson. They beat Hudson. Hudson beat them 5-3. I looked, and Verona was also winner over university school. So just throwing that out there.
Well, that's also why university school is your fourth seed going in here. But yeah. But honestly, I think we're in for, you know, a good semifinals over this Thursday and Friday. I think all six games should be good games.
I think the biggest problem with university school is that when it comes to scoring goals, they're very reliant on one guy, Jack McGregor. 36 goals, next closest is 13. You'd like to see another guy, you know, on a state tournament level team, you know, up over 20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that a 20, I think a 23 point difference between your first and second goal difference between your first and second leading goal scorers is a pretty big jump. And when you give another team a chance to really focus on one guy like that, it can be a problem.
Well, you remember last year when university school went to state and they played Hudson? That was a pretty one-sided game.
Well, I mean, Hudson last year was virtually as scary. Last 2 years was virtually as scary as Notre Dame is this year. Not quite,
I agree with,
but close.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But, you know, like Dell said, I mean, these semifinal games ought to be pretty good. And then, you know, Saturday would be championship day. About ready to take it home here in the home stretch. It's getting past my bedtime as we record this on Monday night. So let's go to final thoughts, guys.
Burglar? Yeah, we've heard.
I know you got something that's just like a bee in your bonnet, you know?
Well, it's not a bee in my bonnet. It's just we've heard quite a bit about the times of the games not being convenient for the fans. And, well, I mean, you know me. Over the years, I've always been one, you know, to stick up for the decisions made by the WIAA. I've been their chief advocate throughout the state. You know, me and Tom Schafransky, we go way back. You know, we're like this. But I mean, the games are during the day, and I wrote up a somebody sent me a lengthy email, so I sent a lengthy email reply back. In that, you've got basically three kinds of fan, or yeah, three kinds of fans who go to the high school state tournament. You got people like us. Well, even before we did the Wisconsin Prep Hockey, the lovely Mrs. Berg and I, we've been going down to the state tournament since 1997. We get a room, we go to all the games. That's what we do. So what time the games are really makes no difference. We're going to be there anyway. Now you got teams from like Superior or Hudson, in this case, Menominee and New Richmond. That's a long drive. Those people are coming down there and getting hotels and staying for the whole tournament. For them, it doesn't matter what time the games are. They're there. They got the days off. They're there in Madison. They're going to the games. Game time doesn't matter. For the closer teams, Mosinee, it's an hour and a half drive. Madison, Green Bay, it's not that far. These are teams that can make, or the teams, Verona and Metrolinx, they're right there. Okay. These are the teams that the kids get out of school and they get on a bus and they go to the tournament. They'll pay whatever the ticket price is and the bus is because they get out of school to go watch the hockey game. And they do. They'll send, you know, 3, 4, 5 buses worth of fans down to watch the game. That's why these games are during the day. So the kids get out of school, so they will go and watch the games because that has proven to work. I mean, back in the day when it was, you know, the one division, we'd have all the quarterfinal games on Thursday, and you know, Stevens Point would send 5 buses of fans down there to the game on Thursday. Well, they win, they're in the final on Friday night. Well, it's high school kids. Well, school's over. I'm not going to go down to Madison to watch a game. It's Friday night. I'm going to go do what I do on a Friday night. And the crowds were never as big on Friday night as they were for those Thursday day games because the kids get out of school to go there. You know, yeah, your casual fan, your fourth group is your casual fan who lives in the immediate area and can go to a game after work. You know what? There aren't that many of them. You know, maybe, you know, they've been trying to grow the sport and get interest, but it hasn't worked. The biggest draw, the biggest way to get fans there is the teams that are within driving distance, have it during the day, the kids get out of school, get on a bus and get on to the game. That's why the games are during the day, because that has proven to bring fans in. Me and the WIAA, we're like that.
The funny thing is, I know you've sat there for about an hour and a half just stewing over all of that. Just couldn't wait to let it all out.
Well, when I saw that's really a dumb. My first reaction was, those are dumb times. But then I thought about, you know, who actually goes to the games, and it makes sense. It really does.
You know, the kids like to get out of school, and
yeah,
you know, a lot of times with it, you know, if they go to the game, you know, it's an excused absence, depending on the school, or they just let school go for the afternoon. But you know, I still have some doubts about how they're going to pull this off with the whole attendance thing. I just don't see how it can work, but you know.
Well, I already told you we needed the Rock County Fury and their 5 bands there to blow this whole thing to hell.
if we can get every one of those bands to play the same song at the same time, it would be okay. But
like, I remember a few years ago, I watched on whatever they broadcast the baseball state tournament on for the WIAA. It was like a Thursday at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, I watched Antigo win the state tournament for division two or three, whatever division they're in. It was during the week, during the day, state championship game. Like, it's not a weekend. It's like weekday. I was at work.
Yeah.
And like, it's that's the kind of how it's done for state tournaments. You know, for all the people that like to say, look how Minnesota does it. Look how Minnesota does it. They play the exact same times we do. They just have a lot more fans show up. And well, they played in the NHL building. They still had a lot more fans show up.
They're bigger division, Class A or Double A, whichever one's the biggest one. They have their games. They have their championship game at night.
Yes.
On Saturday night.
Because in Minnesota, you can justify it because people will watch it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, we had a comment on Facebook that's like the Wisconsin state champ and the Minnesota state champ should play each other. Like, that should be a thing. And you know what? Wisconsin versus Minnesota Class A, that would probably be a really good game most years. The top Wisconsin teams and the top Class A Minnesota teams, they do really well comparatively against each other. And there have been times that a Wisconsin team could probably skate with the Double A state tournament teams. You guys don't see it, but we get, you know, we post on our website the computer rankings, the LSQ rankings from Dr. Matt Stevens. We post the Wisconsin rankings, but he sends the entire Midwest. Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, I think North Dakota's in there. There might be Illinois in there. He sends the whole Midwest. And not last year, but the year before, that first Hudson year, I think it was, Hudson was like ninth in the Midwest. With just a whole bunch of Double A Minnesota teams ahead of them, and Hermantown, who is a Double A team playing Class A. So, like, we can skate with
them. You really feel that way.
I do. The big difference is that, I mean, people talk about the state tournament and fans, and hockey is a lot smaller in Wisconsin than it is in Minnesota.
Yes. You know,
someone talked about the numbers disadvantage. There are roughly, for the 21-22 season, because USA Hockey hasn't released this year's membership report yet because the year's not over. For the 21-22 season, there were about 20,500 hockey players in Wisconsin registered with USA Hockey. That's all age levels, 20,000. In Minnesota, 8 and under was 19,000. Just 8 and under. Their 8 and under group is basically the same size as our whole state. Which is why I get so annoyed when people are saying, look at what Minnesota does with their state tournament. It's not the same thing.
Okay. I'll jump in here too. And that, you know, all those people who say, well, the whole state tournament should be on TV. This isn't even me defending the WIAA. This is me defending broadcasters. The WIAA doesn't make the decision to put it on TV. The WIAA doesn't determine the time of the championship games on Saturday that are going to be on TV. Those are the TV stations. The TV stations have to sell advertising. That's how they make money. They sell advertising. They can't sell enough advertising to bump regularly scheduled TV on Thursday and Friday. They can't sell enough advertising on hockey to do that. They can sell enough advertising on basketball to do it. That's why the whole basketball tournament, that's the TV. They're able to sell ads. They can't sell ads for hockey. And they can only sell enough ads for hockey as long as the games are done by 4:30. You have your three games, you got till 4:30, then you're done. That's the TV that sets that schedule. You want the games at night? Don't put them on TV. You want them on TV? You tell them when the TV station, you play them when the TV station tells you to play them. And one other thing about the difference between hockey in Minnesota and Wisconsin, while we were in between, after games, Brett was watching the girls' state tournament was going on in Minnesota on semifinals for Friday night. And Minnetonka got upset on Friday night. And they're talking about a powerhouse team Minnetonka was in the girls with 8 D1 commits on one team in Minnesota. Do we have 8 D1 commits on the girls' side in the state this year?
No.
They have my one team.
And, you know, when you talk about Minnetonka, I can't believe we're sitting here discussing Minnesota hockey on a Wisconsin high school hockey show.
Well, Bill brought it up. Blame him. send your hate mail to trasher@wisconsinprephockey.net.
And he'll get right back to you.
Yep.
Minnetonka is one of those to-do areas of Minnesota, of the Twin Cities, a well-off area. And they, because when I go to Plymouth for the Minnesota NIT, I mean, they have a wall there of squirts, mites, and stuff. And what's that one year I think we counted? They had 32 mite teams. 32. And that's a lot.
People say the WIA needs to do this, and there's things the WIA needs to do. And they say WAHA needs to do this, and there's things WAHA needs to do. Over the last 10 years, Wisconsin has grown in hockey 2 percentage points more than the national average. So WAHA ain't all bad for all you people that hate WAHA. But if you want to make up the 50,000 player gap between Wisconsin and Minnesota in youth hockey, that's not a WAHA problem. That's not a WIAA problem. That's a local association problem. Green Bay Area youth hockey has, I think, 44 bantams this year. Bay Area youth hockey, if you want Wisconsin to be Minnesota, Bay Area youth hockey needs 190 bantams. That's not a WAHA problem. WAHA can't make that happen. You have to make that happen. You know, Wausau has, I think, 2 or 3 bantam teams this year. If you want Minnesota numbers, Wausau needs 6 bantam teams. That's not a WAHA problem. That's not a WIAA problem. That's just the sport. You need more kids, and that WAHA can't make more kids sign up in your town.
You go to the kindergarten and the first grade, and you get talked to the schools, and you go and you make up little pamphlets, and you go to the kindergarten and the first grade and the second grade, and you tell kids how much fun hockey is, and you bring along one of their classmates dressed in his hockey gear, and you tell them how much fun hockey is, and you give them the date, do this before the Try Hockey for Free date that every association does every year, and you get kids out. You got to recruit. Recruit when they're young. Just like Lorelei out there, Bill. She'll recruit the pants off of everybody.
It's just like smoking. You got to get them when they're young.
Oh, my God. Question I had, though, is in Bantams, what association has the most Bantam teams?
I would have to look through so many websites to figure that out.
I would imagine probably I'd be very surprised if an association had more than 3. Junior, you think that sounds about right? Probably 3 would probably be the most.
You know, it depends, because some associations
how many players you put on a team.
I mean, some associations will have more smaller teams
rather than double roster teams. Kids.
But I mean, as far as the WAHA tournaments and stuff goes, I don't think you can really have more than 4 at any level. You've got A, B, C1, and C2, I think it covers it.
Speaking of that, Waha state tournaments get started this weekend. Always during the high school tournament.
Well, they tried 1 year without doing it during the high school state tournament, and it did not have any effect on the numbers at the high school state tournament.
Right. Well, everybody said do it during that. It didn't make a difference.
Nope.
Well, everybody says, I mean, they tried it, and that's a good, that to their credit, Waha and the WIA worked it out that one season. They tried it. It had no impact on anything. So they said that was a lot of work for nothing. So we don't need to do it again. Because you think about it, it really does not impact that many teams.
No, it doesn't. All right, guys. Anything else you feel you gotta let it all hang out about
before we get out here? One more time, I gotta say, you know, go Mustangs, my new favorite fan base.
Only thing that I'd like to throw out there is hope to see a lot of you fans show up at our Wisconsin Prep Hockey Awards on Friday evening at 4:00.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We're doing that.
Yeah. How do you like that? You're going to be giving some stuff away. And it's at on the west side. I know the hotel. I can picture it. But the thing's changed.
Marriott Madison West in Middleton.
I was going to say it's changed hands so many times.
Lots of M's.
Marriott Madison West, 4:00. That's pretty much would be right after the
boys an hour and a half.
What's that?
Give you time to get cleaned up.
Get a shower and everything.
And we'll have it done in time for everybody to go to dinner.
Yes.
And the cost is right. The cost is right. It's free for you to come enter, and there's no tickets.
No tickets, no entry fee. All of the nominees or all of the finalists get an award this year.
We learned our lesson last year.
Last year, the Burrish and Kenyon finalists didn't all get awards. Only the winner did. This year, all of them get awards, which was expensive.
Thanks, MJ, for coughing that money up.
It's been a tough go this year. All right, guys, we're going to take it home.
Yep.
All right, Thursday, we get it all going. And guys, we're gonna do podcasts after each day. We'll do a Thursday night one and a Friday night one. And then next Monday will be the last one.
So we might just do a Friday night one and do all three. Depends on if Sports Engine gets the thing fixed so I can post the audio without having to post the video. Because if we're relying on video, I don't know how we're going to do that.
Okay.
But it makes us famous.
Go Mustangs. So for the Berg family, Dell, I'm Mike Hammett. See you this week in Middleton at Cap Ice. And thanks for following us here on This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey.